This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by TrekFan. TrekFan isn't just a Star Trek fan club, it's a challenge. You will explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. And in the spirit of an enlightened future, TrekFan is absolutely free. Not just free to play, but completely free. Find out more by visiting fm.trekfan.org.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow standard orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us home.
I say.
You will obey. It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends. Welcome to Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show about the original Star Trek series. This is a show where we dive into the characters, concepts, cliches, and other things that don't start with C about the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru. I'm the TOS editor for the network. And with me today is my co-host Mike from Commentary Trek Stars.
Hello.
Hey, Mike. How's it going?
It's going okay. Been watching some World Cup.
I understand that there's some kind of sport.
Yeah, I feel like a phony because I don't care about soccer for 3 years and 50 weeks of every 4 years. And then, for those 2 weeks, I'm just like, ooh, this is interesting.
USA.
But whatever,
No, it's soccer. If I may speak on a serious note, soccer, I do actually understand. I played it when I was a kid.
Oh, cool.
To get moving around. My stepdad was my coach and stuff. So
well, that's cool. Yeah.
I've always understood soccer, but I don't watch it. Who is that kind of time?
Yeah.
4 hours a game or whatever.
Oh, like an hour and a half. And there's no commercials, so that's nice.
Woo! Well, today, we're not going to talk about the World Cup, because it's not really Star Trek related, though I'm sure that we could figure out something. Uniting, the world uniting to play the World Cup is like the future, where you don't need money. There's no commercials, you said, so...
Yeah.
It's like the future.
Yeah.
But we're not going to do that.
No.
We're going to talk about a double C. Back to comic comparison, where a couple months ago, we went through the first couple issues of the Star Trek JJ Verse ongoing comic, which was Where No Man Has Gone Before. And in this episode, we're going to talk about the next two issues that they did, which was on the Galileo 7.
Yes.
Which I, for shame, just realized today isn't referencing the 7 on the side of the shuttle.
Well, it is. It's referencing both.
It's like, okay.
Yeah.
A double meaning. I understand.
Yes. And this is the first episode of the original series proper, which I ever saw.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. It was a good episode.
It is a good episode. And it's a good issue of a comic, mostly because they don't change too much.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's a pretty good issue of the comic as well. It almost plays out completely the same except for the end, but we'll get into that.
So the issue and the episode both open with a captain's log and an angry, commissioner.
Yeah.
Who doesn't seem to care for the stop off that Kirk and party are making to explore this nebula.
I mean, to be fair, the commissioner has a point. He's talking about how I think it's millions of lives are in jeopardy because they need to get this vaccine to them. And Kirk is like, this is a pretty crazy looking nebula. We should probably take a look at that thing, right?
Now, do we know what kind of like plague there is? Are these people suffering or is it just like,
From what I understand, it's a vaccine, right? So these people aren't suffering, but if they don't get it there in time, then a bunch of people could die. Basically, I don't know if it's millions or thousands or whatever, but millions of people could die if they don't get this thing in time. And I think they do change that a little bit in the comic where it's not as dire, Like here they're like a cargo of medical supplies. you know, and the guy's saying, you know, like, we need to get these supplies to them in time. Whereas I think that it's actually in the episode like a vaccine where it's like, you know, these people's lives are definitely at risk. And he's like, whatever. It's a step off.
That's good, because that helps with one of my problems with this being that the same guy is on the same ship taking the same supplies to the same place years before it should happen. Like, I didn't catch that they're not talking about a plague on New Paris now. They're talking about taking just medical supplies. So it just so happens that the same guy goes in the same ship to take different things to the same place years before a plague is going to break out.
Yeah. And I mean, that's one of those things. That's one of the things which, you know, does sort of bother me about these comics in general. You know, and I think we talked about that last time, where it's like all the same stuff is happening pretty much, but what is it, like 12 years earlier or something like that?
Right.
Oh, also, they didn't change the star date. It's 2821.5. They hadn't quite picked up on that yet in the comic books. The new numbering system.
The new star date?
Yeah. So that's unfortunate. They did the same thing with Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Yeah, and they've got the, I mean, you can't trust the comics 100% because there's the whole, like, in the Mirror Universe, the Enterprise is just the refit Enterprise and doesn't even look like.
Yeah, yeah, but later on in the comics, they did fix, you know, I'm surprised they didn't go back and fix them in the digital version. Maybe they did. I'm actually reading the print version of this one, so.
No, I've got the digital version. They didn't fix the star dates.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
It is unfortunate. But it plays, the beginning plays pretty much Galileo launching with seven members, the Galileo Seven.
Mm-hmm.
Get it now. It's really clever. Yeah. I'm sorry, I apologize.
That's okay. Yeah.
The only difference in the crew complement is that instead of random Yeoman Mears, we have Yeoman Rand.
Yeah. Which
I'm assuming that it was going to be Yeoman Rand in the original, and then they'd gotten rid of her by that time?
Yeah, probably. It is kind of interesting that they would make that change because, I mean, not to burst anyone's bubble or whatever, but at least my assumption is that by sticking Yeoman Rand in this comic, they are essentially conceding that they're not going to use her in the movies. You know?
Yeah, okay.
Because then you're establishing a look for her and everything like that, you know. It's not like they had already cast Yeoman Rand for Into Darkness or something like that, you know.
Right.
They're basically saying,
this is...
Yeoman Rand is fair game, you know, because we're not going to be using her.
It's probably the same with Christine Chappell and
mm-hmm.
all of the other strong female characters that can...
it's kind of strange that they wouldn't do that, that they wouldn't have Yeoman Rand in the movies, but no, whatever. What can you do?
So, yes, the Galileo crash lands on a planet in the middle of this nebula. In the original episode, Galileo pretty much just is there because they didn't want to smash up their one Galileo model that they had made.
Yeah.
But in the comic, because you've got the opportunity, they crash and their wing tears off. And their shuttle is much, much, much bigger. Like everything in the JJ verse, the Galileo 7 in the Galileo 7 comic, as opposed to the Galileo 7 on the Galileo 7 episode with the seven people from Galileo 7, it's got the wing blown off and it's bigger. It's bigger. I don't know about.
Yeah, in the episode, they say it's 24 feet. That's definitely more than 24 feet.
Yeah. I don't know why. Because it's one of those shuttles that, you know, Kirk and them got to the Enterprise on, you know, like had 100 people on it.
Mm-hmm.
And here it is, just filled with empty space so that seven guys can go and say, hey, look at this nebula.
Which is fine. I'm okay with that.
And bringing McCoy and Scotty still doesn't make any sense in the comic.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, sure, you know, everybody else, you can have the excuse, oh, they're nebula specialists and stuff, but taking your chief medical officer and your chief engineer and your first officer, This was before the Next Generation, I guess. Before, I mean, you don't send the important people.
Yeah, later on in the comic, I think it is. You know, when the commissioner is like, "We need to leave," and Kirk, spoilers, starts like spouting like Starfleet regulations and how it's like the mission has changed, and basically that gives me the authority back. And he's like, "Look, I've got my first officer, my chief medical officer, and my chief engineer down there, and you want me to just leave them there? Are you crazy?" And it's like, dude, maybe you should have thought of that before you stuck those three dudes in a shuttlecraft, you know?
Hey, look, we're transferring all this important stuff. Ooh, shinies. Why don't we send all the important people on the ship except for me?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, whenever there's like a, you know, like the State of the Union or whatever, you know, like things like that, whenever that they have like important sessions, there's always like one member in the progression of presidency, which is left. Like you can never have everyone who has like a in the line of succession.
The line of succession, really?
Yeah, you like they can never all be in the same place at the same time because if something happens.
Because one of them is Batman. No, wait. Never seen Batman and President Obama in the same room.
There you go. I think it's more practical than that, but yes.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. So there's always one dude.
So that you don't get a repetition of Battlestar Galactica.
Right. Even though, no, but that was okay.
Secretary of Education.
But that's fine because she was in the line of succession. So, you know, she was in the same place. So it was all good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. But no, that doesn't make sense for this, though, putting everybody in the line of succession on one shuttle.
Right, exactly. It's the same, same general
concept. The first officer, the second officer, and the third officer.
Right. And it's not like they're all going to a state dinner or something like that. You know, I mean, they're going into this weird anomaly that they don't know anything about. So, whatever. He was young in the comics.
So, the shuttle crash lands, and Spock is forced to take command. They've got to repair the shuttle. They've got to get it charged. And then they find, after somebody gets hit by a giant spear, that they are not alone on this strange planet.
Yeah. Now here's one difference between the comic and the episode, which I think is kind of interesting. It's not even really a difference. It's just sort of like a new dynamic. Whereas in the episode, McCoy's like, "So, Spock, you're in command. You know, you always want to be in command. You know that you being the logical one, you know, you always are probably criticizing what the captain has to say and everything like that. And now you get to run things all logically and stuff." And the episode is really all sort of about logic. I mean, I think we talked about this in the Spock episode or something, but like this is sort of a great primer for people who haven't seen the show. In terms of Spock's character, because you can see how logic dictates his actions, you know?
Yes.
But in the comic, there's that thing about how Spock was the first officer and Kirk sort of leapfrogged over him. So in the comic, you have the conversation between McCoy and Spock where McCoy is like, "Oh, so here you finally get your chance at command. That must be pretty exciting for you since, you know, you think you probably think you should be the captain now anyway, right?" You know? So that's kind of an interesting thing to just kind of throw in there.
It's maybe a matter of pride more than than just a matter of curiosity to see if you could do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It seems like Spock runs into less resistance. I mean, sure, he gets into a fight with Boma like he does in the episode, but I feel like he has... They're not demanding to have the funeral in the comic, right?
Right.
They're just like, "We can't dump the body," which is, I mean, again, like we said in Where No Man's Gone Before, you kind of have to accelerate things when you only have two issues of a comic to tell an hour-long story.
But one of the things that they do to kind of get around that, which I think actually kind of makes more sense from a storytelling standpoint, is they don't introduce at the beginning that they're not going to have enough power to take off without leaving some people behind. Because in the episode, I mean, I kind of see how that works dramatically because there's this element which is introduced in the beginning, and it's sort of, you know, is there to think about throughout the episode, where it's like three people are going to have to stay behind, you know, then one dies, then another dies, and then it just becomes like, well, one person's going to have to stay behind. Whereas in the comic, there's no thought of leaving anyone behind until after it's decided that, you know, phasers are what's going to be used to power this shuttle. And see, that, mm-hmm. that makes a lot more sense to me, because it's like, yeah, under normal circumstances, of course we could bring everything up. But if we're going to be powering this thing with phasers, then that's going to introduce some problems. And one of the problems is we can't have it be as heavy, you know?
Right.
So I think that actually works better in the comic from a logical standpoint.
Another difference between the comic and the episode is that in the comic, the Enterprise comes and is, you know, trying to search for them. Or no, they do send shuttles, don't they?
They send shuttles, they never. Like there's only one thing where, like, they send a shuttle and then the shuttle comes back and they're like, yeah, two people got hurt and one person died, and it's really bad down there.
But in the comic, did they send shuttles?
I don't know if they did, because when I was reading it and watching the episode at the same time, I want to say that yes, they did send shuttles, but they couldn't find anything. Then okay. They just brought them back, you know. So it was like kind of a nothing thing. Basically the same result, but you didn't have that scene where the guy's like, oh my God. It was just they sent shuttles down, the shuttles couldn't find anything.
Yeah, because it's a big planet and they couldn't. Mm-hmm. They had to pick up their visual scanning.
And there's a whole thing in the episode where they're like testing out transporting and all that stuff. And that really isn't present in the comic at all. I think they just say, like, it wouldn't work.
Because Scotty's not here to make it work.
Right, exactly. Well,
Chekhov's there. He could do that.
Yeah, and they do, like, shift some of the dialogue. Like, you know, there is some interesting stuff just in terms of, you know, storytelling stuff where it's like, in the episode, he calls down to the transporter room and says, like, hey, how's the beaming thing? And here he just asks Chekhov, and Chekhov answers it. So
how's the beaming thing?
Yeah. So Scotty comes up with the idea to use the phasers. I do kind of like how they sort of modified Scotty's character to make him more Simon Pegg-like in the comic.
Yes. It's kind of every answer to every question is something, you know, how are you doing, Scotty? I'm thirsty.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah. Which I like that character in the movie. I think that's kind of cool what they did with him.
Yeah. The big difference to me is the ending. So they don't make it, the shuttle doesn't make it out of orbit as the Enterprise is leaving, and Spock jettisons and ignites the fuel to like send up a flare to show where they are.
Mm-hmm.
That's what happens in the episode. But in this one, they never make it out of orbit before they decide that, you know, now we have to start letting people off. And what's most interesting to me is Spock seems in the comic more insistent on sacrificing himself. And I wonder how much of that is because, according to this timeline, he just watched his homeworld explode.
Yeah, well, there's an interesting thing here first. You know, like in the episode, it's always like, well, we're going to have to leave someone behind, you know? And then, it's just that basically enough people die that it becomes a moot point, right?
Right.
Okay, in the comic, which I think is weird, the one guy dies or whatever, but, you know, they keep the body on board. And then Spock, in a very illogical move, says, like, let's do this, you know, let's try it and see what happens. And it's like, why would Spock say that? Why would Spock say, like, yeah, let's throw logic away and just see if we can actually take off? And then they try taking off and it doesn't work. I mean, like, here, you know, Spock says, everyone strap yourselves in. And then is it Boma? He says, what about the weight? Won't we crash unless someone stays behind? And he says, a hypothetical I am willing to risk, Mr. Boma. And then they take off. And then, you know, they're up in the air. And Boma's like, sorry about that, you know, outburst, Commander. You know, that was, you know, whatever. And then they have a sudden power loss and the thing goes back down. And then they need to, like, that to me, like, if they really wanted to push what you're talking about with, you know, Spock's death wish, then instead of trying to take off, he would have just been like, I'm staying behind, you know, and basically so, would have played out the way that it does in the volcano.
So maybe it's the opposite of what I'm trying to read into it about Spock's death, but maybe it's more that he wants to save everyone that he couldn't save on Vulcan.
I could see that.
I feel like each one of these comics, the destruction of Vulcan affects it in some way.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe Spock is trying to save everyone because he couldn't save everyone on Vulcan. And that causes more problems than original.
Mm-hmm.
That's why they don't make it into orbit and have to do the fuel thing.
Yeah.
Because they had too much weight because Spock wanted to save everybody and all the bodies so that they get good burials and stuff that he wasn't able to do for Vulcan.
Right. That makes sense.
And the only way that he's saved is because Uhura steals a shuttle in the comic.
Right.
And just happens to find him, which is convenient because all the other shuttles couldn't find them.
That's true.
Maybe Spock being, you know, telepathic, light, you know, a light telepath. Maybe there was she was drawn to him.
Yeah, you know, like thinking about it, like, because the way that it plays out at the end, you know, they're meeting with Kirk or whatever, and Uhura's like, sorry, Captain, I violated the order and everything like that. And Kirk's like, forget it. I'm just mad I didn't think of it first. Like, they could have done that where he's like beaming what people, whatever, but then they don't send any shuttlecraft out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would have made sense because they don't really say how she found him, just that she left, right?
Right.
So I don't really get that, but whatever.
Maybe the comic would have been better had they established some kind of, well, we don't want to send more shuttles because what if the same thing happens?
Right, which would make sense.
Like some kind of field that knocks out their power, you know, some kind of thing, an obvious danger that they wouldn't be able to send the shuttles down.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that would have helped with the thing, and she risked it, and because she risked it by herself, maybe because she was by herself, maybe the planet has like a higher gravity or something, and her being alone in the shuttle is what allowed her to get through the... Maybe if they had some more pages, they would have expanded on something like that, but...
Yeah.
They decided to keep it the same and just have the different ending.
Right. And the ending in the episode itself, where he ignites the fuel, and they're like, what, we're gonna have not gonna have enough fuel to get back? And he's like, yeah, I know, but maybe this will act as a flare or whatever. And then it works. And then he gets back on the ship, and this whole episode, which is about how Spock does the logical thing and everything like that, then they have him back on the ship, and they're like, hey, you know, that was desperation. You know, you did that in desperation. Desperation is a highly illogical, you know, thing, and all this stuff. And they're like, you did this, and, you know, it probably wouldn't have worked, but it ended up working. And, you know, can you admit that you didn't use logic, you used emotion? And he's like, no. And they're like, yeah, right. And, like, I watched that, and I'm like, no, Spock is right here. That was the logical thing to do because they weren't going to make it back with the fuel that they had. So he did the one thing that he could do. He increased their odds, like he was saying, you know, before, you know, when they're like, we're all going to die on this planet. We might as well, you know, be buried properly. And he's like, look, how about we increase our odds of not dying on this planet? You're probably right. We probably are going to die. But we have a greater chance of dying if I spend my time burying this dude as opposed to working on this shuttle. So it's like you can try flying with this little fuel and it's not going to work. So you ignite it and it's like, let's see what happens. That's the logical thing to do. Spock used logic when he ignited that fuel. And then they were giving him crap about it once he got back on the ship. And it's like, no. And like, if I was Spock, I would just been like, man, You guys really don't know what logic is, do you? I give up.
You know what?
I just give up.
It just turns and he walks off the bridge. Yeah. As everybody laughs. Just goes down the turbo lift.
Yeah. And they're all thinking like, oh, we got the Vulcan. And he's just like, I work with freaking idiots, you know?
Maybe what we don't see is the next day after the Galileo 7 episode is him presenting a PowerPoint. This is what logic is, people.
Yeah.
That's... Logic is not like acting like a computer like you seem to think.
Yeah. Galileo 8 just takes place in a conference room and it's Spock and 7 other random dudes. He's just explaining logic to them.
I love it. I want to see that episode. What we'll do is next time that I talk to the Star Trek Continues people.
Oh, yeah.
Because this last one was a direct sequel to Mirror Mirror. We need to have them do a direct sequel to Galileo 7 where it's just Spock explaining logic to the crew.
See, that's great. Like, there's this thing, like, in you know, no one will ever see these things. But, you know, when I was in, like, high school, I made, like, a detective short film, right?
Okay.
Where this guy is a private detective, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, like, anytime I made a short film, I would stick this guy in there because he was my best friend or whatever. And one time I was, like, sitting around with Max talking about, like, stuff. And I'm like, you know, we were talking about making a movie or whatever. I'm like, you know what? We've never seen this character, like, how he became a private detective. That would be okay. Cool, right? And Max is like, no, that wouldn't be cool. You know what that would be? That would be him going to, like, the DMV, filling out a bunch of paperwork, and getting his detective license. And I'm like, that's good. Let's do that. And we shot it, and it was great. It was, like, him, and we had, like, this whole montage where he's, like, beating people up and stuff like that. And then it's like, but how did I get this license? And then it cuts to him, like, in an office, and he's, like, you know, talking to this woman, and she's like, you need to fill out Form 51C, you know? And then bring that back along with these forms and all this other stuff. I'm telling you, Galileo 8. That's what Galileo 8 needs to be. Star Trek Continues needs to do this. They could shoot it in a day. Like, yes. Well, just when they're doing episode 4 or whatever, just have some people go off to the side. It would take like 5 hours to shoot this thing, you know?
Maybe that should be on us. Maybe we'll have to go down there.
We need to do
and
that.
Do it ourselves on the sets they're not using.
We need to talk to them about that. Because why wouldn't they do that? You know? Just put it on as like a little short, you know, like their version of Marvel's one-shots. They could do that for like every episode. It's like, and here's another little 5-minute episode.
Yes. Another 5-minute sequel of what was happening in between episodes.
We need to talk to them about that. Yeah. That'd be good. I would watch that. I'd be more interested in that than whatever the regular episode is.
Well, it was fun talking about Galileo 7 and Galileo 8 and the other potential sequels. But that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
With the Slushoverse, a lot of people are wondering, is JJ going to stick Slusho into Star Wars?
Earl Grey.
It's like Leroy Jenkins, you know, he comes running in.
Sir, there's another starship entering the zone. It's the Enterprise!
Enterprise!
The orb.
But here's the thing, they put themselves in a box with Dax. It's such a cool sci-fi concept to say that the symbiont is the 300-year-old slug and the outer host body, you know, they're mixed together. And that the host changes from
the ready room.
Because, I mean, what's the alternative if you're not going to do what Chris just suggested? I mean, what's he going to do, get down on his knees and say, oh, emissary, I'm with you now? I mean, right, that's right. Not really going to work either, right?
So allow me to ride my flaming chariot back to Starfleet.
To the journey!
I am genuinely excited for this week's episode because we are doing a commentary on Threshold. Yes, you heard that right. Threshold, the infamous episode that everybody loves to hate, but I love to love it.
Warp 5.
But the fact that they had been in so many other shows before, that they literally were pulling footage from Voyager to help flesh out that episode, I think is sort of like, it's an Easter egg and it's a theme and it's also literally pulling out of another show.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
I feel like he always had the sense that the younger generation had a much clearer sense of what the future was going to be like than sort of the previous one.
Melodic tracks.
And his theme come on, and I just thought brilliantly tied in with the original series, because these were the original series characters, but it was giving it a movie feel, and he just did a brilliant job on his composition.
Continuing mission.
We have had long discussions in the office about how we can get an appropriate chair sitting simulator into the game. Unfortunately, that's such a specific system that would really only be used by Riker.
Literary treks.
And then she leads him back to her place and says, "Welcome back to my place. It's a good place to be together." And Kirk says, "Together is good."
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek Talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, the Windows Podcast Directory for Xbox and Zune, or you can stream from the website. Just visit trek.fm/pd for podcast directory to get all the links. If anybody wants to contact us, pitch their 5-minute sequels to episodes or whatever, just go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose to send a show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. Or you can find the tab that allows you to send a voicemail using your webcam's microphone, which maybe will play your pitch on the air. Or you can join our forums on trek.fm/forums. In social media, you'll find us on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Mike, where can people find you out of orbit?
Well, you can find me right here on Trek FM doing commentary Trek Stars with Max. And you can also find me on commentarytrackstars.com, where I do commentary Track Stars off topic with Max and our friend Brandon. And you can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K.
You can find me on Twitter at 005, DUBLEOFIVE. And you can find me on guesting on various other shows around the network. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsors, who helps us bring Standard Orbit to you each week. And our first sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible is the premier source for audiobooks, with more than 150,000 titles to choose from and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers and even some of the most famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive, Federation, and Spock's World, Audible has something for everyone. Mike, what do you have for everyone?
Well, I have a book which it would seem looks at old Spock's adventures in a post-TNG world. Star Trek Exodus, the Vulcan Soul Trilogy, Book 1. It's written by Josepha Sherman and Susan Schwartz. It's narrated by Boyd Gaines. And it says, following their bestsellers Vulcan's Forge and Vulcan's Heart, Sherman and Schwartz embark on a new trilogy chronicling the latter-day adventures of one of Star Trek's most beloved characters, shedding new light on his world's shocking history. I'm assuming that the character that they're talking about is Boma, but I could be wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's Spock. I'm not sure. They've got Spock on the cover, but, you know, covers are usually inaccurate.
That's true.
So, yeah, and you can get this book for free on audible.com since you're a listener to Trek FM.
That's right. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you've yet to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. And our new sponsor, TrekFan, is a great way for you to take your love of Star Trek and put it into action. At TrekFan, you will explore new places, learn new things, and collaborate with other fans to solve puzzles, complete real-life mission objectives, and win great prizes. Challenges include communications, engineering, and flight operations. There's internet relay chat, free books through Starfleet Academy, and much more. Best of all, it's absolutely free. Not just free to play, but completely free. Find out more by visiting fm.trekfan.org. Again, that's fm.trekfan.org. And remember to use this special URL so they know you heard about it here on Standard Orbit and Trek FM. Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landry.
Mr. Chekov, take us out of orbit. Ahead, warp factor 1.
Hi, sir.